Well, this is what Occupy in the whole country is doing. It's educating people, whether they like it or not. We're not talking about, gee, I love for Tent City to be down there, you know, and they're talking about the grass under here, like, oh, we're destroying our parks. Oh, my goodness. Hey, you know what? I go to meetings on a regular basis right here at the Justice Center. I work quite a bit with the Justice Center, being in the prison pipeline and all that. And here's the deal. I come by these parks on almost a daily basis, and these parks are pretty empty most of the time. And the pigeons are out here. I feed the pigeons. The pigeons are out here eating bread. There's a lot of people that sit on the benches, to be sure. But basically, these parks are empty. So what are we talking about, that the grass is being destroyed, I just saw this on news last night, you know, oh, the Tent City, those people, they're destroying our parks. And I'm going, really? So, okay, I think grass grows pretty fast.
Yeah.
And that's the point. The parks are more important. The empty parks are more important than what is happening right here. So people don't get it?
Well, I think people are always afraid of change. This is something new. This is something different.
Yep, yep.
I think some of the empowering things are people really demonstrating to themselves as much as to the outside world that we can take care of ourselves. We can feed people. We can keep things real clean. We can wash dishes. We'll get things done.
Yes, and we're doing that down here. And that's what's so wonderful. Hey, guys, anybody that's listening out there, and I'm not talking about the people who are listening right here around our tent, but if you're out there and you're listening, come down to Tent City while it's here, to the, what are they calling it here? I call it Tent City.
But Freedom Rectangle.
Freedom Rectangle. Come down. Please come down. Because it's sane. It's sober. It's clean. There are people that are caring on many, many levels. Many levels. Many levels. You know, you don't have to be afraid of anything down here. You do not have to be afraid. Come down. I'm 70, for God's sake. I'm sitting here and I'm safe. I'm safer than I would be if I were on the street going home.
Well, I'm 49, a perfect square, 1 year away from 50, and I stayed out here two
you're
nights.
You're my daughter's age. But educate yourself. And you know what? Yes, change is uncomfortable. Who wants to change? But guess what? You gotta change. There isn't any option. We're gonna change. I was once a beautiful young woman, and now I'm an old woman. I don't know about. I wasn't as beautiful as I, but I'm still pretty beautiful. But the beauty's on the inside. I'm gonna die someday. That's change. That's a major, big deal change. Guess what? I have no power over that. I'm going to do it. Hello. So, you're going to change whether you like it or not. So why are you afraid of change? And especially if that change makes your life more wonderful, if it makes the country more wonderful, I love the United States. This country needs change. It needs desperate change. But you know, I lived in Europe many, many years. Many years ago, I lived in Europe. I lived there for many, many years. I taught and worked in Sweden, Norway, Finland, Russia, you know, so on, so on, so on. And when you're in these socialist democrat countries, there is no homelessness. You are in need of nothing. Everything's supplied to you. If you break a fingernail and you call the commune nurse, she'll come and help you. It's a totally different way of life, and you get so comfortable and all of that. But the Swedes will say of themselves, you know, I prata lite svensk, go ahead and speak that language, but the Swedes say of themselves, but we have no spirit. Everything's taken care of. We want, so they long to do what we're doing here. But when I was over there, there were some people that were trashing the United States. Oh, you warmongers, and you're always warring, you know, whatever, whatever. And I said, yeah, but we'd be the first ones, if somebody did decide to bomb you, we'd be the first ones over here helping you. And I also said this, and it suddenly dawned on me, oh my God, we're only a little over 200 years old. This country's very new, and you know what? We're still in experiment stage.
That's good thinking.
We're still in experiment stage.
That's good thinking. How did, in this experiment stage, how did European-style socialism get to be a bad word in American politics?
Exactly. Exactly. Because it works.
I lived there. My first son was born in Germany.
There you go.
And we had a midwife come to our house.
Exactly.
Every
Isn't
month.
That wonderful?
Yeah. We had the kid, and all of a sudden I started getting a check in the mail.
Right.
Kindergeld. Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm for that. Hello. What's wrong with being secure and your family secure? And okay, so you go to work and you pay 75% of your money goes back to taxes. That would be in Sweden.
I don't think it was that high in Germany.
So it's a very high tax. But hey, you're taken care of. You get a commune number, and so you're frightened of that. Well, I'm not saying, okay, I'm social. You know, I'm a socialist. I'm an activist. I'm a socialist democratic. Hey, as an old person, why am I not? I'll tell you, if I had the money, I'd be so tempted to go back, because I have friends there, and they say, "Well, why aren't you coming back here? What are you living in the United States for?
Back to Sweden or what?"
Yeah, because here's the deal: as an old person, this is one of these issues. I'm 70 years old in the United States. I make about $800 a month. You think I'm in the middle of a lot of well-being? I go to a clinic, and I can't get half the medicine I need. Now, I'm not extremely ill. I do have MS, but, you know, I'm not, you know, extremely ill yet. But there is no support here whatsoever for our elders. There's no support for our children, the babies. There's no support. We have no social support. And that leads to people struggling. See, we're talking ripple effect here. And then when people struggle so hard and they're exhausted, and they're frantically stressed out and depressed, they're going to start turning to some way to fix that. Well, that usually is alcohol and drugs. And then when they get into alcohol and drugs, the ripple effect ends up, and a lot of them end up in the prison, you know, and so that's my whole thing with prison pipeline. Well, here's the deal. When I was in Sweden, I was an honored citizen. I was taken care of. I had a sense of security that I'll never have in this country. But on the other hand, we're also only a little over 200 years old.
Yeah.
So we're still experimenting.
So what happens if you go back to Sweden now? Do they take care of you in your retirement?
Yeah, but I'd be bored.
Getting your medicine all the time? What is it?
I'd be bored. I wouldn't be sitting here broadcasting on KABU. I'd be bored. So
we
I'm
love
staying.
KABU. Looks like we've got a guest that's come by to say hi.
Yes.
It's August. My name's August. Hey. I work at the info booth.
Hey, August, what are you doing out here today?
Well, at 3 o'clock, we have a meeting of the homeless advocacy group.
All right. Is that an official group of the Occupy Portland movement? Or
We are making this group. This is our second meeting. We're trying to find the needs of the homeless that are in camp here.
Okay. And you're going to have some services, or what's...
We're trying to contact the social services groups that are around Portland. I've recently been advised that their headcount's down and feel that a lot of them have moved here to camp. Some of the homeless I've spoken to have several reasons why they aren't allowed into some of the locations, including pet owners. There's not much we can do about that, so we're trying to work with everybody. Some of the homeless have actually become volunteers here. We've had some working at the coffee roomers, the coffee table, and they've been doing a lot of work around for us.
Do you work in social services yourself, then?
No.
Got here volunteering, or?
I'm volunteering. I started volunteering 5 days after the march so I could let the youngsters rest, because they're running on 3 hours sleep. So
yeah.
I come in at 8 in the morning, get the booth open, get all the stuff cleaned up and ready to go.
So the idea is to hook up people who services with people who need it.
That's what we're trying to do with this meeting at 3 o'clock.
Good. Thanks. Yeah, a lot of my work is with the homeless, addicted homelessness. And the way we treat our homeless in this country and in this city is it's criminal.
Well, the homeless and the aged, we're the
So how some people do vote to be on the street. They vote with their feet and they vote to be on the street. But hey, we got a crisis here in Portland with the homeless. And the attitude, don't sit here on this side of the street. Don't sit near a building under shelter. Sit on the sidewalk with the cars.
Right, you can't build a shelter anywhere on public land in Portland. And a lot of that is because of City Councilman Nick Fish.
Yes.
He seems to have a personal issue with anybody that's below him.
Yeah, he's head of HAP-HUD, and the crap that's going on inside of HUD buildings. I live in a HUD building, and the stuff that's going on inside of the HUD buildings is atrocious. I'm going over in 1st of November to talk to Amanda Fritz about it, and I'm going to try to put a little strong arm on his.
Because
I've got a lawyer on it, and I'm looking to. I might end up suing some people for some of the crap that happened in our building, for instance. Several people. Anyway, so...
Yeah, here's an interesting tidbit. Nick Fish had our garbage collection cut off. Parks and Recs was picking up about 40 bags a day.
Here at this location, you mean?
That's right. Yeah. Now, sanitation is having to work with all volunteers that are coming in and helping out.
Yeah.
Whereas Parks and Recs was happy to do it for us. Now, Nick Fish has put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, and how's the homeless tent deal going over Chinatown, I think?
R2-D2 has started sending people over here because they don't have any more room.
Okay.
They're full. There's over 70 people there, and they're actually just telling them to come over here.
And that's a private lot, and the powers that be are trying to strong-arm them, and that's a private lot for them. This is, punitive, that word again. What is it in us that chooses to be punitive? We cannot be punitive to our homeless brothers and sisters. Hello, we're talking human beings out there. How would I recommend that every human being on the planet and every human being in Portland that has a problem with homelessness to camp out for a week?
Oh yeah,
1 week, that would do it.
I camped out for two nights here, and I got an awakening myself.
So 1 week, that
I realized
would do it.
Some people just cannot take care of
themselves.
There's
a strong golden light in each and every one of us, even Nick Fish, that will someday come to growth.
I believe that too, yeah.
Go to everyone. So
yeah, and
I'm
going to
go run a meeting here. So
thank you.
Thanks for stopping by.
Terry
thank
Strunk.
You. Thank you
August
for coming Lamp on.
Rose.
Cool. Well, see, there we are.
Yeah, it was interesting.
That's another problem.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, anyway. Well, so what is it then that you're 49, I'm old enough to be your mom. What is it then that in us, in humans, that would allow what's happening with the homeless? The ones that don't want to be out there. What... Okay. We have another guest that's got an opinion on this. This is going to be interesting. You want to be on?
Put the headphones on.
Headphones.
Yes, sir.
Just to keep on mic. It'll just remind you to keep on mic.
Yes, certainly.
You have an answer then to the question.
Yes, I think I have an answer for you. I'm getting some.
Yeah, you'll hear yourself.
You look familiar.
Not sure. Who? Yeah, that's just too confusing.
Sure, you're good.
Who were you thinking of that I look like? Okay. No, you were asking...
A human being. How about that?
You're asking what it is. Well, it's the same thing that all the masters and sages have tried to tell us from the beginning. We are hypnotized by life, mm-hmm. by sleep.
Uh-huh.
We are caught up in what could be called the life sleep.
Mm-hmm. So what happens at night? We get programmed by our sleep?
Well, that's a different state of sleep. I call that the rest sleep. We need a certain amount of rest sleep to survive as animals on the earth.
You're talking about spiritual sleep, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I'm talking a spiritual dimension.
Spiritual dimension.
And if we go back to all the messengers who've been sent to the earth, whether they're known or unknown, male or female, they're all doing the same thing, which is saying, hey, folks, you're sitting in the waiting room of life, you're wandering around, you're asleep.
Yes.
Wake up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because one of the most important things to realize is impermanence.
Yeah.
Everything that is compound is impermanent.
Yes. I think I mentioned I'm going to die someday. I'm closer to the grave than I was 10 years ago.
What's something that's not compound and permanent?
I would say things that are in the unconditional world, the subtler worlds.
An idea? Or is there any nouns?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
A molecule? Would a molecule qualify for that?
No.
Or an idea?
It's an idea. I think it's called love, isn't it?
I would, yeah. I mean, there's that aspect of it. Love, but it's just, it is simply an unconditional world. It is what we could call the world of will and the world of being. Those worlds are very difficult for us to understand because of our conditioning from the world of function.
Yes.
The world of material objects.
Yes. Yes.
We're constantly being told, admonished, that, look, being caught up in the world, you're going to be eaten by it. It's the sort of thing, I take a lot of my spiritual inspiration from the esoteric part of Islam. And Islam has been heavily demonized. But we have to remember, in the core of that is Sufism.
Yes.
That is the basis of it.
Yes.
And the Sufis have always told us, be in the world, but don't get caught up.
It's called the illusion, isn't it?
Right.
It's an illusion.
Right.
I had a movement in my long career as an activist. I had a movement called Wake Up World, We're Losing Our Children, which is apolitical. See, I can't say that. To this day, Wake Up World, We're Losing Our Children. And it's so true. Because we're all the children of each other. I mean, we all got born here, so we're all children here.
Yes, absolutely.
And so Wake Up World, We're Losing Our Children. So so what do we do to wake up?
Well, that's a interesting question. The central problem that we've had is all the spiritual traditions that have been given to us within three generations after the founder dies, the teachings become distorted.
Yes.
And from there, it gradually goes into basically three branches. The exoteric, which is the most outward form of the practices of all the religions.
Mm-hmm.
The mesoteric, which is still the outward aspect, but still going towards actually what the real original intention of the founders were.
Mm-hmm.
And then the esoteric, I should say, which is usually the caretakers of the original tradition who have managed to preserve the original teaching.
I think if religions would stop fighting one another, that would help.
Yes, certainly.
You know.
Certainly, but...
You can't give away what you don't have, and if you're out there saying mine is better than yours, you know, so again, I talk about the broken systems, and religion is a broken system. Yeah. And so we need to get it together there too, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
There are some religions that are attempting that, the peace-loving religions, but...
Yeah.
But we... So again, it's a choice, you know, I mean...
Yes.
This illusion fascinates me, this business of being asleep while thinking we're walking around being awake. I work with that a lot in myself and others, you know.
One of the most influential works I ever read on this topic that was a classic in the 60s was a book called The Master Game by Robert S. Dorat, an outstanding work. And he also published a book after that called Self-Completion, which was a follow-up, which, beautiful piece of work. I highly recommend it to people. And he pretty much outlines what we're dealing with here. It's not for everybody. I've concluded that only a small percentage of people within one lifetime will probably become fully awake.
Well, it's a challenge. Are you challenging the listeners to wake up?
I'm challenging everybody to look at yourself. Mm-hmm. When you're ready to wake up,
mm-hmm.
Go for it.
Yeah.
But realize, once you go past a certain point, you can't go back to who you were.
Well, see, that's the change, the fear of change, isn't it?
That's right.
The fear of change.
Absolutely.
And I think that seems to me like that's kind of the root of an awful lot of why these movements come bursting forth, and then they die out, and then they burst forth again. And, you know, I've seen this over many, many years. I've seen that pattern. And that's... We wake up and then we form committees and we get busy and then we go back to sleep while many Babylons fall again. I wrote a whole piece about that. You know.
Well, that is
so,
one of the
but
most...
But why? Why don't we just stay awake?
That is... Ma'am, you brought up a very important point, and this is one thing in one of the spiritual paths that I came across that is very hard for us to understand, which is the idea that we as human beings in the ordinary state that we're in, we cannot do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is already done. We are so conditioned and mechanical
wow.
that we have all the semblance of having freedom and the initiative to do, but really it's a total illusion.
Wow.
No free will?
Wow.
Oh, free will is there, but the problem is that we're so conditioned.
So we don't use our free will.
We don't use our free will.
Oh.
Because of what? Now, that's not a natural state of man. It's somehow imposed on us, or how did that come about?
Well, there's many different stories in the tradition that talk about this. Mm-hmm. We can go back all sorts of places, but basically it was like at some point something went horribly wrong with our development. And really, we can trace it back to Babylon.
As a human race, yeah.
Yeah, we can trace it when the outward roles of slave and master were created. When that happened in ancient Babylon, that's really when we started going downhill.
It's really interesting.
And we're still there, but we can't. We're not going to stay there forever.
No.
Because I think, and so this, so Occupy Portland, all the Occupy movements, all the movements that have ever happened like that, but here's the one that we're present about today. This is the attempt to change that, to wake up.
Yes.
Question, you know, that was a question.
Yeah, certainly I think on that level, we have to raise the level of being that we have in this
So what
country.
What does that entail, though? I mean,
what does that entail?
Uh-huh. How do you do that? How have you done that?
It entails understanding suffering. As I was talking with a good friend of mine when we were going to up to a Buddhist center to do some practice, there are basically four types of suffering. We have useless suffering, unavoidable suffering, voluntary suffering, and intentional suffering.
Wow.
Useless suffering is something that I've struggled as for the past 4 years, almost past 4 years, as a disabled person. It's basically a thing of poor me, I'm a victim. You have to let that go.
Yes.
You have to look at all the things in life.
Not an uncommon thing.
And in the realm of alcoholism, which is my, you know, I work with alcoholism with prisoners particularly. Pour me, pour me, pour me another drink. That's the common statement over there.
Absolutely.
In my little arena, that's what we say over there. The addicts go, pour me, pour me, pour me another drink. But it's definitely a fix. That's that instant fix to that pain. I don't want to feel pain. Darn, I'm going to go have a drink and a drug. Yeah, exactly.
And ma'am, I'm sure you found that the most difficult thing for these folks to sacrifice is that suffering.
Exactly.
Because people grasp and cling to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's the first, probably most difficult suffering we have to give up. The next one is even tougher, which of course the Buddha spoke of quite extensively. I just cite him as an example because he did a pretty good job of outlining that we deal with the unavoidable suffering of birth, death, sickness, and old age.
Yes.
We can't control or influence anything, or the only thing we can really influence is how we respond.
Right.
If we just react, then we're helpless.
See, I'm birth, sickness, old age, and death is the next step for me. So, see, I live that as we speak.
Trying to make us jealous or what?
I live that as we speak, folks. So treat me kindly while I'm here, because I'll report in when I pass.
This is why I greatly admire...
That one was not kind to me. You want to do something about that? No, never mind. But no, part of this waking up. You know, I agree. I so agree with that, having been through... Spiritual transformation is it not the most difficult thing maybe for
Absolutely.
A human to do?
I couldn't agree with you more, ma'am, especially in relation to death, especially with the American way of life. And I can relate a personal experience. I recently had my dear sister, she passed away from cancer.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And she's back in the Midwest, and I didn't get a chance to go back to see her because I couldn't. The entire time I talked with her before she died, I could never talk with her about death. It was always this Pollyannish sort of stuff. It was that's a useful tool in certain circumstances.
Yes.
But it's not a useful tool if you want to get close to somebody and really talk about how you feel.
Well, that's a lot about this, what's already been broadcast since I've been here anyway, is transparency.
Yes.
You know, that business of being transparent with one another, and that would include all the subjects that we're prone to as a human being.
Yes.
And death is one of them, you know.
Yeah. And death is something that one may say, okay, well, what do we do? Well, I really like how the Tibetans have dealt with it. I think they've set a good example for us with their culture, with the practice of something known as poa. Poa is a practice where when you realize that you're getting ready to die, you consciously die.
Wow, cool.
You know, and the other thing is to really have an honorable death. And how do you do that? Mm-hmm. By living an honorable life.
Yes. So that brings us to why we're all here today, huh?
Right.
This is an honorable movement.
Yes.
And we at KABU are being honorable by allowing the voices to come forth and say what they need to say.
Yes.
And so this is great. This is a good message.
It's
a good message.
Yeah, there are two other things I just want to mention real quick, and I realize I appreciate you folks letting me talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
The other two forms of suffering are the most difficult to understand in some respects, but are the most important in the spiritual transformation, and I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
The next is voluntary suffering. Everybody is familiar with this. What voluntary suffering is, it's dealing with the problem that we have on the earth plane, which is the law of selective actualization, which basically says we can do anything we want just about, but we can't do everything that we want.
Yes.
Thus, we must pick and choose what activities we are going to do.
Uh-huh.
And we only have so much time.
Yes.
And so it's like if I have the aim, for example, a very simple aim.
Just a short period of time.
You know, of doing something, I have to give up other things.
And that causes suffering because you have to give up something else.
Yes.
Because of the finiteness of time.
Right. For example, the marathon folks here, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that. If I want to go and participate in a marathon, it probably means that I'm not going to spend a lot of time in the morning surfing on the internet.
Mm.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to be getting up and training. I'm going to be doing things.
Yes.
You know, I can't do everything I want. If I want to participate in a really good way, that's what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then the last form of suffering, and I'll leave you folks, intentional suffering is the most hard, the best example I can give you is being a parent.
Yes.
If you're going to be a good parent, you have to intentionally suffer for your children.
Yes.
You can't just go out and do whatever you want.
Exactly.
You have to take care of those children.
Yes.
And the thing is, you have no idea of the outcome.
Yes.
You have no idea how they're going to turn out.
Exactly.
And the same thing is with this movement.
Yes.
This is what I see, and I'll leave you folks with this. This is planting a seed.
Yes, it is.
This is to help future generations.
Yes, it is.
We have to do everything we can consciously to do that.
Yes.
We have to remember that all these people who oppose us, that they are not separate from us.
Exactly.
As we said here, you know, these people have somewhere in them the divine spark within.
Yes.
They may have around that killed the essence of who they are.
Yes.
That's what a demagogue or evil people, objectively evil people, are. So it's really up to us.
Yes.
And there's really no recipe. There's nothing I can tell people specifically. It's there.
Yeah.
There are subtler forces in the universe that want to help us.
Yes.
But if we're caught up in this world of function, this material world, they can't help us.
Uh-huh. Of dysfunctionality, yes.
That's why I meditate every day. That's why I'm very careful in how I interact with the world.
Uh-huh. So it's called connection.
Well, you're also talking about looking inward. So how does that,
right.
Does that connect with this larger gathering, which I felt is about getting together with other humans? How does that connect with looking inward?
Because it has to do with the fact that, as I was just reading this morning, we have an inner and outer world. Not even a supreme being can help us make that connection. We have that choice. We have to make that connection between who we are and the outer world, as I said, through the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to suffer intentionally for the greater good. And we have to be together internally in order to do that. So I guess on that note, unless you have any other questions, I want to say I really appreciate you letting me talk. My name is Sean.
Sean, thank you so much for coming by. This is really food for thought, and it's very relevant to what we're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Grace and Joe. We're broadcasting live. We're streaming live from downtown Portland. Freedom Rectangle, Main Street runs right through it. Another interesting guest, Grace.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, he opened up that other dimension that we as humans are. We humans are not just flesh and blood and molecules and atoms and so on. He touched on a lot. I think a lot of the reasons why people do go sideways. Because after all, we have this very short period of time to do some big stuff. And if we don't know what the big stuff is and we get caught in that little stuff, you know, like getting up every morning and getting caught in that insecurity illusion, because, and I definitely believe in this is such a higher way of looking at us as human race. That was the base. That's the base of it. And if we forget our base, that we are very, a religion is a choice, but we are spiritual beings having a human, we are spirit having a human experience. You know, we're actually spirits having a human experience.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, raise your hand if you think that's easy. This is not an easy thing.
That reminds me of the Stoics who would call a human a poor soul burdened with a corpse.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
We'll leave it there for a second. We'll be right back.
Yes.
Okay, Heidi's came back. Heidi's come by to join us. I've known Heidi for a while, just from where I used to live. And Heidi, you want to tell us about your idea about mediation? For right here down at the camp.
Yeah. So I've talked to quite a few people down here, and I've had several phone calls at home. I am a negotiator and a mediator in private practice, and here for Multnomah County Small Claims Court, and I've offered my services down here. In relationship to some of the problems that I've heard from different protesters are happening at night, especially at night. And
yeah, I stayed over a couple nights, and it's definitely a different scene. I mean, the first thing that I realized was, wow, some people really ought not to be on the street. Some people can't take care of themselves, and it looks like they could be dangerous. It's frightening for me because some people are so large and have some problems that they need help with, and if they're not on their medication or whatever it is, it can be quite frightening. So There's also a couple of confrontations. One night I was staying here and someone was really angry about the partiers. It was kind of like the partiers and the more people who were politically motivated. And if you want a party, go home. People were walking around saying that. And the partiers didn't seem to mind, to tell you the truth. They were just, that's why they were partiers, I guess. But is that what you had in mind, trying to get those people together? Or
what I have in mind is to get together anybody who's interested in keeping this protest cohesive and alive, anybody who's interested in increasing the numbers and keeping the numbers that are already here. And I say that because I've talked to several of the younger protesters here who are feeling, and I, you know, I'm sad to say this, this is not about gossip. This is about keeping this protest real and alive and happening. And some of the younger protesters, you know, embarrassed to be associated with anything related in this movement to drunkenness, drugs, and fighting. They want it to be bigger than that, and they have a grand vision of what this is supposed to be, and I'd like to see the integrity of the vision of this protest continue on. So I'm here to offer my services however I can to help with that.
How will mediation help then? Will you try to organize a place where there's no drinking allowed, or what kind of compromises can we make to make everybody happy?
Well, I think that it would be great to have a facilitated dialogue where we invite anybody who wants to come on the pretext of what we just said, keeping this protest together and alive and functioning and working efficiently and moving forward and making demands and getting them met and going forward and forward. We invite everybody to a facilitated dialogue in a location, a central location here, maybe at the Terry Schrunk Plaza, and we do a live facilitated dialogue where people just come to the center, give their thought or their idea on a question. The question could be, what does this protest mean to you? And we create that common shared vision among everybody and reignite it and just starting there. Starting right there and then seeing where that would take us.
Well, I do know one thing. I work in the field of alcoholism and drug addiction, and especially with prisoners and street people for that matter. And this movement is very attractive too. And also the homeless, I mean, they live in tents like this all the time.
Yes.
So they're going to be attracted.
And the food is very good here.
Oh my God, look how many homeless people there are, you know, all of a sudden it's just this whole crop of homeless people. So you're going to get that, you're going to get all sorts of people here. You're particularly going to draw the company of people who have been, they're just starving to death for like my like
a voice.
Like things
a voice,
a voice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so you're not going, there isn't in my opinion any such thing as stopping it. I don't think that there should be that for that matter, because they are who they are and they do what they do, but to embrace them and to do it right here on site is what I'm thinking, because nobody's going to go to any building. I'll tell you, none of these people are going to go inside anywhere. So to do it here on site and just have a circle. Start a circle, maybe bring some drums in, some songs. I think the thing that attracts people is singing and drumming and singing and doing that. And just bring it in and then start having a conversation. Like, who here would like to be more peaceful? Who here would like to, you know, whatever?
Well, what I'm asking for is, and everything you said is exactly how I feel. I mean, I believe what you just said. I think what I've heard from the younger protesters is that they're feeling like they want to leave, not because there's homeless here, not because there's alcoholics here, but more because there's fighting. Loudness. And drunkenness in the night. And I think that needs to be eliminated.
Yeah, well,
I don't think it has a place here.
From a personal perspective, I would have stayed perhaps longer than two nights if I could have gotten some sleep. For example,
in a perfect world.
But it's a reality.
Is a reality, it's also a little bit of what there is no control or manipulation. Or I'm not saying you're doing that, but there is when you have a setting like this that's spontaneous in the moment. So actually, it isn't the drunks are fine because they're drunk.
you know.
But
drunk.
If we're losing protesters, young protesters out here for a goal because of drunken fighting in the night, that is not what this is about.
That is their choice, and I think what I'm sorry to hear that. And yes, it is threatening.
I've talked to numerous people here who are lifting their tents are here, but they're not staying the night anymore,
right.
And they're not feeling
right.
like it's productive. And I'm talking, right. I'm not going to mention names, but it's people who are in, you know, who are working big sections of this and doing important things here.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
We don't want this. So the facilitated dialogue could be an opportunity
to
bring out, you know,
The
dialogue is different from a conversation.
Yeah, do it.
The dialogue is, it's open-ended, so people can say what they feel without having to have anyone respond to them to do.
You have the passion. Go for it.
Yeah.
I would dress warmer.
Yeah.
Because you have to be down here at night.
I will.
I would wear.
I have no problem with that. I organized the first protest against the war in Iraq and Afghanistan here, so I have a strong activist background out on the streets.
Yeah. I've been doing this since 16. So.
Long time.
Yeah. Okay. So the deal is then come down, and I think this opens up the thought that everybody, every human, every soul that's down here, no matter who they are, has a very specific gift they can give this camp. And by the way, if you look at the symbolism behind the so-called rowdy violent, there are some violent people, and they are scary, and they do have to be careful. People do have to be.
Well, I don't think
protective.
That these younger protesters were scared. They claimed they're embarrassed.
Well, but
they're embarrassed to be associated with that. That's what they don't want to be associated with.
That's part of
the sickness of the greater part of
our
society.
Of the problem.
Yes, part of the problem.
If they leave and go down the street, 100%.
See, because here's the deal. Oh, well, I'm uncomfortable, but hey. Keep your eye on the prize. Keep your eye on the bigger movement, no matter if you're uncomfortable or not. I'm out all the time working with drunks and people that are homeless and drunk and in prisons and so on. And here's the deal. They are scary, and they are I've been vomited on, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. So that's a very unpleasant situation.
Yeah, yes.
But... And I have a lot of friends that are, oh, my God, how can you get near those people? They stink, and they this, and they that. Mm-hmm. Well, because I'm trained not to be uncomfortable, I guess. But the people that are uncomfortable with that, you know, the best thing they could see is, oh, my God, there's a whole bunch of people that are like that.
Yeah.
This is part of society. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is what this country and this society has produced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there they are right in your face.
Yeah.
So it's a teachable moment.
Yeah, it is.
It's a teachable moment.
That's why this dialogue
would be
so great.
Don't go away. Yeah. Help educate that whole, educate each other, make it a teachable moment.
Beautiful.
Be strong with it.
Yes.
Unite. And I'll tell you, if you embrace these people with kindness, love, hot cups of coffee, et cetera, et cetera, they will ratchet down because they're starving to death for kindness and love.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the elders, you know, of this camp, I hope, can be teaching the younger ones that I'm talking about without, you know, mentioning names. You know, keeping an eye on those younger ones who look uncomfortable, helping them integrate themselves into what we're just talking about, that it is the problem that's been produced by our culture and our society as a whole, helping them see that, because they may not be seeing that. They may just be seeing their, you know, girlfriend across the street coming down to see them, and then see this other group of people, and they're, you know, I mean, they're 18, 17, 16.
Right.
You know, you can understand how they get their perspective as well.
Right.
So I think it's something
and people, especially young people, and you're a young person, you know,
I'm 43.
Oh, you're young.
I'm not really young. Did you say I'm not?
You're a pup. I'm 70, okay? My daughter's 49, his age. Okay, so here's the deal. See, we have been taught from little kids on about the other.
Yes.
Be careful of the other.
Yeah, and mythification.
And so those people are the other, and they're in your face. What an incredible opportunity. You couldn't get a better education than that.
Uh-huh.
So that's the message I would give to these people that are uncomfortable, the young people that are uncomfortable. Inform them. You know those others that you were taught not to be And you do have to be careful. I'm not saying that it's not dangerous.
Yeah.
But those are the others.
Yeah.
And they're in your face. Mm-hmm. Talk to them.
Yeah.
In fact, go and give them a hug, unless you see bed bugs all over them or something. Mm-hmm. But give them. Embrace them. They're starving to death for kindness and love.
Yeah.
And to get hugs and love from the people that call them the others.
That's a wonderful reminder for everyone listening.
So we're all the others down here.
Yeah. In our own way, we're all another.
I'm an elder. I'm another. I'm invisible. Mm-hmm. See, I'm not invisible here. I'm sitting here with a mic on my face, and I'm a hotshot broadcaster on KBOO.
Yeah, you are.
I broadcast for Prison Pipeline on a regular basis, so on and so on. So I'm a hotshot broadcaster on KBOO. But I'll tell you, the day when I'll have to leave here, I'm not camping out here because I've got arthritis, and I'm sorry, I've done that, been there, done that. I'm not doing that anymore. But I'll get in my wheelchair over here, my buggy, which is parked right over there, and I'll go out of this camp, and I can guarantee you, the minute I hit that street right over there, I'm invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the other.
Yeah.
See, I'm the other. The minute I leave this camp.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's society, and society's been taught that. That's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. That's part of what we're about here.
Yeah.
We've got to stop looking at each other as the other.
Yeah. This might be something that would be great to address in the General Assembly meetings as well, just touching upon this, because it is... a part. I mean, with all the ideals and all the goals that everybody has here, this can't be left out.
No, these issues
can't be left out.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
Well, there's the tent, they call it, it's D232 or something, the homeless camp. There's a homeless camp near Chinatown.
Somebody called it R2D2.
R2D2?
Right to Dream 2.
And they're camped on private... A private lot.
Legally camped.
Legally camped on a private lot. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of people that have a problem with tents and camping, well, here it is, are trying to get them, no, you can't do that. You can't camp there. It's because, why? Because when they look at it, it reminds them, oh, my gosh, it could be me next.
Yeah.
I could be homeless.
Yeah.
See, that's that lack of security. That's that underlying,
fear.
It could be me next, you know. And so and people don't like anything in their face that reminds me of their mortality there. That's why old people are invisible. Because I remind people, you know, of mortality. Mortality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, she's old. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because I never got treated like that when I was young. And
perfect. We're taught in our society that everything should be permanent. You know, our building structure should be permanent.
Yes.
Our building codes are, you know, for that 60-year flood, you have to use 10 times the amount of concrete to make it permanent.
Exactly.
And,
well, look at Portland. Look at the look good that Portland put. You know how much energy and time and money goes to the outside of these buildings? The look good?
Yeah.
Do you know what goes on inside the buildings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're a mediator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The horrendous prejudice issues
and
conflict
imbalance.
And injustice and imbalance that goes on inside of every one of these buildings.
Yeah.
Bosses and employees in constant conflict and the way the HUD buildings are, the people inside are being treated. It's horrible.
So is there anything that you can say to the young people who... one more thing, I've got to go. And is there one more thing that you could say that would address what it is that... I came to tell you here today that there are possible protesters out there who, well, they already have started leaving some of the camp and their tents at night because of the drunkenness and
stuff.
They're
feeling threatened. Yeah.
Well, they're feeling embarrassed to be associated with it. What can you say to these people who are listening right now?
Well, I think what I would say is back to what I had said before. Mm-hmm. Why are you walking away from a teachable moment in a real classroom, spontaneous, the most realistic classroom you're ever going to be in? Why are you walking away from it?
Sure.
And your neighbor.
You're cheating yourself when you walk away from a teachable moment.
Yeah.
And
sure, if someone were missing an arm, it would be obviously not right to walk away from them, but if they're really poor or drunk, somehow it's okay.
It might be a good idea to go up and ask them, why are you drunk? Ask them, why are you drunk?
I think it would be great to
See, there there we go.
See, this
gentleman with a Starbucks cup has come up with a pair of socks and he's talking to us about something. I can't quite get it out.
And you're talking about a sock. We got a guy. What's your name?
I'm Mark Harvey.
Mark, why are you standing there with a sock in your hand?
Listen very carefully. The reason is because these people are being good to everyone.
Yeah.
A good people gave me my hat. Now I'm looking at socks, and now they say that there is good life in America.
Uh-huh.
And well, I'm trying to be an American bride.
Cool.
Is there anyone that wants to call in, call K-Boo Radio, and
yes,
tell them the name is Mark Harmon. Anybody on, I've never been on the internet, but anybody on, if you've ever seen the Michael Jackson video...
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark, I don't want to interrupt you. Can I ask you a question, though?
I'm on y'all.
Have you been drinking at all today?
I am not allowed to ask questions.
Thank you. See? Now, there's one of our guys right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We just made his day. Do you think anybody ever gives this guy a voice? We gave him a voice. We gave you a voice, didn't we? See, that's, there's the deal.
So I think what I would say is I would ask the elders who are here at the camp at night and who have heard this broadcast to keep an eye on the younger ones and their fear or their embarrassment and help them learn to understand how to integrate themselves into a greater understanding of why these people are here, why they're drunk, why they're on the street.
Yeah, ask them.
So it will be up to people who are staying down
here, who
understand that,
right,
to help the younger ones understand, to embrace these people, and to help move this movement forward.
Yeah, well, see, it's a teachable moment, so if you're walking away from a teachable moment, that means you're frightened.
Yeah.
And so you got to investigate, why are you frightened inside yourself?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was the conditioning I had as a little kid. I was taught, don't go near those people, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I would say anybody that's left camp, come on back. We need you. We need you to set up again. We need you.
Mm-hmm.
And embarrassed, that's an interesting word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should look that up in the dictionary. What does it really mean when you say, I'm embarrassed?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
And then the other thing was worried that the movement isn't progressing forward, that it would be held back.
I've heard that
was the other concern that I heard.
Yeah.
Worried that this kind of activity would hold back the movement and the public's perception of it.
Well, and so that actually addresses the media, other than K-Boo and media like this, that's actually, they're addressing that on a regular basis when they have their little... snippet about Occupy Portland, and in essence what they're saying is, ooh, the police haven't cleared them out yet. That's basically what they're saying. And Occupy Portland, it's still there. Yow. And so that addresses the whole issue that we're talking about here. Why are we not been swept away yet? Because we have a mayor that isn't going to flick his finger and sick the police on us. We have some people there that are, they're doing everything they can to keep this place, because this is symbolic of everything we're talking about here, of all the stuff that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for unity, oneness.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to get all the others together in a state of oneness, if you will.
It's time to recognize our common humanistic goals.
Yes. Yeah. And that... But we're not talking about an easy thing here.
Yeah.
This is not an easy thing.
Yeah.
See, what's interesting is the word wasn't, I'm disgusted, I'm frightened, I'm discouraged, I'm dismayed, but I'm embarrassed. Now, that's an interesting choice of words.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to find out, what does that mean to those folks? So I would go back to those folks and say, you're embarrassed, do you know what that really means? Mm-hmm. So what's the underlying?
Yeah, right.
What's
yeah,
your underlying? You know, mediators, yes. You know
yeah.
how it is.
Underlying interests.
We always go to the
needs,
underlying
perceptions.
We come to the table yeah. and we put up with all the blithering on both sides uh-huh. going, well, actually, if you just listen to us, we know the real deal. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
isn't that against professional ethics to call it
yes,
blithering?
It is. Yes, it is. Yes. But I'll, so. Since I'm not at a table right now.
Are you okay on time? Heidi, it's time to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, it's about time for me to go. But I just want to say, you know, my number is out there, and I am here to offer any help and assistance I can in any personal conflicts here
cool.
that need to be mediated, any negotiations that need to happen with the police or anyone else,
cool.
any meetings that need additional facilitators. I'm right here. Give me a call.
You know, the best person to talk to is Amanda Fritz. She was down here not... I think the other day, yesterday or the day before.
Okay.
She's definitely for this. I would go to the info booth and make sure you have literature over
Amanda
there.
Amanda Fritz?
Well, she's Commissioner Amanda Fritz. I would go and tell her about what you want to do.
Because
okay. you're already doing it for People's Court, right?
Okay.
For,
uh-huh.
And then I'd go to the information booth over here and just let them know that you're wanting to be of service.
Yeah, I've received several phone calls
good.
From very
good,
different
good,
people,
good, good,
and
good.
When I've come down here to try to figure out good. Who it was that called me, I've got calls coming from different people in the
good,
camp, but that aren't united.
Yes.
So that's what I actually came to talk
and
to you about
that,
is how can I get a cohesive group together, and that's where I got the idea for the dialogue. An invitation, a flyer. For a dialogue amongst protesters,
yes.
you know, within a week
yes.
or two,
yes.
is what I thought.
Well, just go in and take your passionate, open, mm-hmm. lovely heart mm-hmm. and just suggest.
Uh-huh.
There's a forum at the General Assembly for announcements, certainly.
What would unity look like here? Uh-huh. Because you personally can't unite, but
yeah.
you can be the instrument to ask the question.
Yes.
What
yes.
does mm-hmm. unity look like here? This is every time I go to
uh-huh.
mediate anything, I mediate extreme conflict
uh-huh.
inside and outside jail systems
okay.
and on the streets and so on and so
nice.
On. So I'm on the Gang Violence Task Force and I'm on the Police Review Board,
uh-huh.
Citizens Review Board. So
uh-huh.
I work with the police over there in uh-huh. those buildings off
nice.
And on.
Nice.
And so here's the deal. Every place I go and there is any kind of conflict,
mm-hmm.
and I just... pretty much ask, well, what does unity look like
yeah.
here?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody stops because they don't know.
Yeah.
So that's what we need to,
yeah.
right.
Or they know, but they just haven't been asked ever in their whole life.
Well, they also
have to find the words to express that love center that's in everybody.
We haven't been
it's
taught.
In everybody.
We haven't been taught.
Yeah, but it's there. It
yeah.
is there.
Yeah. Well, we mediators,
uh-huh.
you're very valuable because you've been trained to ask the right questions
uh-huh.
and you've been trained to allow... an open space where that process can happen.
Yes.
But it takes time and it takes patience.
Yes.
And patience will antidote embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck. Good
luck. Description. Thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Your time.
Heidi, thanks for stopping
Do you
by
have a card?
So much.
You have a card?
I don't have a card.
Okay.
It was Heidi, facilitator, down to Occupy Portland to volunteer her services.